block. No C, 1 point red. It's time for today's episode of the ATA Nation podcast.
Sir, I will live with perseverance in the spirit of Taekwondo. Courtesy for fellow students. Integrity within myself. And to become a black belt leader. Welcome to the ATA Nation podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, sirs and ma'ams, instructors, students, parents of Songam Taekwondo, welcome to the ATA Nation podcast, episode number 28. We are so thrilled to have you here today. I hope you enjoyed the last episode with our friends from South Africa. If you haven't checked that out, make sure you do. And ladies and gentlemen, today we are continuing our journey through tournaments 101. This, you know, might be, maybe we should say this is 202 or something like that. I don't know. But I want to cover all things sparring and combat sparring today. You know, we're not going to go over the real basics of it, but we want to give you some advanced things, some stuff you might not have known about, or you were just a little confused about when it comes to sparring and combat sparring for tournament competitions. Okay, so then after that, we're going to hit some upcoming events, which we've got some neat things that we need your help with for upcoming events. So make sure you stick around till the end of the episode. But let's get started with Tournaments 101 Sparring. So, ladies and gentlemen, we love to spar. Sparring competition at tournaments is open to all ranks, not just camouflage belts and above. Now, many white, orange, and yellow belts don't yet have all the proper safety gear or have not learned how to spar, so they can compete in one-step competition instead. Or white, orange, and yellow belts are eligible to compete in both one steps and sparring if they wish. You need to talk to your instructor about that. We're not going to cover that today because depending on what your school does, we'll kind of decide for you whether you do sparring or one steps when you compete. Of course, in sparring and combat sparring, we need all the appropriate safety gear. You need to make sure that it is the approved ATA safety gear. I know right now, as I'm recording this, there are some issues with the supply chain, so you need to check with your instructor on that. But it is important that you are getting the proper safety gear from your instructor to make sure that you are qualified for those events. You need to make sure all boys, men, all have a cup and support if they're going to do any type of sparring. Everybody needs to wear a mouthpiece in every type of sparring. Obviously, face shield, head pad, hand pads, chest pad, feet pads all are required as well. And in combat stick sparring, you are, of course, going to need an approved combat stick and you are allowed to use the specific combat gloves as well. So again, talk to your instructor about those. You know, most people understand the rules of sparring, what are legal target areas, that a match is 2 minutes, it's a continuous 2 minutes. We don't stop time when we call break. We just continue the time to go unless there's a reason the judges call stop time. And we know that it's the first person to 5 points in traditional sparring that wins, or in combat sparring, the first person to 10 points. Or if no one reaches those, whoever has the most points at the end of the 2 minute time. And of course, the 2 minute, if there's a tie at the end of the 2 minute time, then the next point will win. Now, I think probably one of the most confusing things for new, tournament competitors or people learning about sparring as competition is what the calls the judges make are. So you'll see judges do one of four different signs with their flags or their hands or whatnot. So they will, one, point with the flag in their fingers to the side, red or white, that they thought got a point with the number of points indicated by their fingers. That's pretty easy. If I see red scores 2 points, I'm going to point the red flag towards the red competitor and put two fingers out. Now, there's also a call that is a no see. That's usually indicated by putting the hands in front of the face. That is a no see means that they didn't see a point. They didn't see what they think somebody else is calling. It's kind of saying, I don't know what you're calling break for. And I didn't see anything. Another one is the hands down in X position in front of them. That is often referred to as a block, but that is not the correct term. It's a no point. This indicates that the judge did not think there was a good point scored. That could be that it was blocked by the other competitor. It could be that it wasn't a correct technique. It could be that it didn't hit the target. There's a lot of reasons they might call a no point. That's why it's not called, not technically a block. It's called a no point. And that's the hands down in front in an X. And then, of course, the final one is the warning symbol that's waving the flag down to the right, or down with the red flag or down with the white flag, indicating that there was a warning that the judge saw. Now, of course, there are three judges in sparring and combat, and so you have these three different, these four different calls made when a judge calls break, when they see something, and they'll make these calls. How that is determined then is, first of all, if there's a warning call, we automatically stop the time. That just gives us the time to process the warning and not waste the competitor's opportunity to score more points. More often than not, though, it's not a warning call. It's something else, which is usually the, you know, the no point, the no see, or somebody called actual points. And that's usually what happens. We call break because somebody saw points. And so the three judges throw their calls. Let's say one judge says 2 points red, one judge says 1 point red, one judge says no see. A no see basically is not a vote. You just are kind of stepping out of the decision making process. Any call for a point, whether that be 1 point, 2 points, 3 points, 4 points in combat, is a vote for that person to get a point or a number of points. So in this case, two red, one red, no see, two judges gave a vote that said they think red should get a point, and one judge said they didn't see anything, so they don't have a vote. Obviously, this means that red is going to get a point or two, but we now have to decide how many points. One judge says 2 points, one judge says 1 point. At least two judges agreed that 1 point at a minimum, and so that competitor will get 1 point. Let's take the same scenario and go 2 points red, 1 point red, no point, with the hands down in front in the X position instead of a no see. In this case, the no see is casting a vote to say, no, I don't think there was a point. And this vote is weighted a little heavier than other votes. A no point vote is actually kind of like a vote and a half. So a vote and a half towards saying, no, there was no point scored. One judge says, yes, there was a point scored. Another judge says, yes, there were 2 points scored. So two judges each saying that there was a point at least. That's two versus one and a half. So the competitor will get that 1 point towards red. Now let's take this same scenario and change it one more time. Let's say the judges say 2 points red, no see, and no point. So one judge saw, let's say, a kick to the head. The other judge didn't see anything. They don't know, you know, they didn't see a point scored at all, and they didn't see that there wasn't a point, so they don't know. Maybe they saw the competitor's back, something like that. And the final one was the other judge said, hey, I think, or in their head, they're like, I see that you think it was a point to the head, but I saw him put his hands up and it actually just hit his arm. So I'm going to call no point. In this scenario, There's one person who's giving a vote to a point. There's one person who says, I'm not voting. I say, no, see, I didn't see anything. And one person who has that no point, which is weighted kind of 1.5 votes. So the 1.5 votes for no point outdoes the one for a point, and so no point would be awarded in that case. And that vote for a point for red, it doesn't matter if it's one, they saw a kick to the head, a jump kick to the head, so let's say it was 3 points to the head, that's still just one vote versus the 1.5 vote for the no point call. So if that confuses you, make sure you talk to your instructor about that. That just protects the competitors in making sure that calls are done in a fair way where, you know, we make sure it's a solid point or it's a correct point or whatnot. Now, obviously, we all see different things in sparring. So I can tell you when I'm a judge, my job is to look at everything that's going on, to watch both competitors. Oftentimes, as a spectator, I'm watching my individual student, or you might be watching your child. So you see things differently because you're looking from a different perspective. Our judges are human. They see what they see, and they call the best of their abilities. And this three-judge system gives us the best opportunity for people to get the most fair judging. Obviously, there are going to be points that are called that you don't agree with. The respectful, the correct thing to do is just say, yes, sir, and keep on sparring. You know, we've all had it happen to us where we have scored points on somebody and we the judges didn't see it. And we've had it where we didn't actually score a point on somebody and they gave us a point anyway. So judges try their best to, and this calling system of points helps us do the best that we can. Now, with those calls, you'll see the warning call. The warning call is often given for things like excessive contact, maybe hitting to an illegal area, maybe a kick to the back, a kick below the legs, a hand technique to the head, a spinning hand technique. You can't do something like a spinning back fist, spinning knife hand. Even something like avoiding the fight. If you're always, you know, you throw a kick or somebody throws a kick and they fall down kind of intentionally or after the kick each time so they're not getting scored on, they can be warned for that. You can be warned for avoiding the fight by running out of the ring. You can be warned for poor sportsmanship, things like that. And in those cases, the judges are going to do the same basic call system where they'll call for warnings, and a judge can say, I didn't see the warning, which is the no-see call. They can block out the warning or say no warning with the X down, and then the other judge could do the warning. And the same system happens there. And then obviously if you get a warning against you, that means that the other competitor is going to get a point if that happens. A couple of things about this, about sparring that are often forgotten by new competitors, are things like, the boundaries of the ring and how you can score or not score if you're out of the ring. And so if you are outside of the ring, both feet outside of the ring, then no, technique that you throw can score a point on your competitor. If the competitor's in the ring and you're outside of the ring, they can score a point on you. Oftentimes at regional events, just because of the space around a ring, if somebody goes out of bounds, they might get the ring might get stopped, call break, and they center back up. Now that is not necessarily required, depending on the space around. Oftentimes, if there is enough space to safely continue the match, one competitor can stay outside of the ring and the other inside of the ring, and the competitor outside of the ring has to find their way, kind of fight their way back into the ring. You are not called to center back up just because someone steps out of bounds. Often if they do, it's a case of safety for the competitors and the spectators watching the ring. If I have 1 foot out of the ring and 1 foot in the ring, the hand that corresponds to the foot that's in the ring can still score a point if I punch with that hand. If I pick up the leg that is in the ring, that makes me completely out of the ring because my only foot is outside of the ring and I cannot score a point then. Or if I pick the back foot up, the foot that's outside of the ring and kick with that foot, then I'm completely inside of the ring then and I can score that way. So just important to realize sometimes what happens at tournaments is somebody's like, oh, I didn't score a point, but they don't realize that they were actually out of bounds. So you got to make sure you pay attention to that when you're sparring. A warning that is given, or sometimes when you'll get something called against you that's a no point, you might not know why. And there are sometimes that the technique is not actually a real technique. So what I mean is just because that you touch a legal target area, maybe head or chest, does not mean that you score a point. If I kick, throw a round kick, it doesn't hit my target, and then I just kind of like jump or lean towards my target and my foot touches their chest guard, I don't get a point for that because I didn't throw a round kick and hit my target. I threw a round kick, didn't hit my target, and then my foot just ran into my target. Another common one we see is somebody doesn't really throw a punch. They just stick their arm out and then run into their competitor. This is usually younger kids in color belts, and they hit their competitor then. Well, that's not a punch. You're just kind of ramming into your competitor, and you will often get a no point for that because it's not an actual taekwondo technique. So you need to be doing real techniques like punches, round kicks, side kicks, those kind of things to actually score a point. You do need to make contact with your competitor. That does not mean that you make hard contact in traditional sparring. Any kind of contact, light contact, just touching the target, scores a point, when it in an appropriate place. Another thing is, the chest protector does not necessarily, specify a legal target area. So, different competitors wear different size chest protectors. I personally like to wear a chest protector that's a little smaller. And so I will have space under the chest protector between my belt and the chest protector or on the sides that are not covered by the chest protector. If you were to sidekick or punch those areas, those would still be a legal point because they're above the belt, and to the front of the body. So that's completely legal. In the opposite case, you might wear a really large chest protector, and often they have that part that goes around the back, kind of over the kidney areas. Just because there's a chest protector covering the kidney areas on the back does not mean you're allowed to kick or punch the kidney area. It needs to be the front of the chest as a legal target area. For combat stick sparring, most of these same rules apply. One difference is the contact made. It needs to be an actual strike. Just like with traditional sparring, it needs to be a real technique. In combat sparring, it needs to be a real technique that you're hitting the person with. So if I'm just like moving my wrist and kind of bumping their head, or it just barely skims, you are often not going to get a point for that. Because if you think about it as an actual weapon, if I am defending myself and the tip of my stick that I'm defending myself with just brushes the person's chest, that doesn't do anything. It's not a technique that is going to defend me. And so I'm not going to get points for something like that often. You are also allowed in combat stick sparring to touch the competitor's weapon only in a parrying situation. So you cannot stop the force of the weapon and redirect it. But and as an audio podcast, this is hard to visualize. But if I am using my hand to continue the force of their weapon and push it through so then I can strike something in that manner, you can make contact with their weapon and not be scored on. Obviously, a dropped weapon, if for any reason, from the time you bow in to the time you bow out, if you drop your weapon, you're going, the other competitor is going to get a point. So don't drop it. And of course, with that, you are not, if I am striking at my opponent and I score a point with the strike, or I hit them with the strike, but as I'm finishing that strike, the stick comes out of my hand, I will probably not score an actual point there because I wasn't able to finish the technique without dropping the weapon. Now, there's the case where I strike, I score a point, as I finish, I'm kind of moving back, they call break, or they're getting ready to call break, and I move back and I drop my weapon. In that case, I can still get a point because I completed the scoring strike. I finished it, had complete control of the weapon, and then I dropped the weapon. Okay? So I just can't get a point if I drop the weapon in the process of completing the strike. And that's up to the judges what they think happened in that situation. Okay. So again, I encourage you to consider watching a ring in the scoring mindset sometime. Now, obviously, when you're watching your friends, when you're watching your children, you're going to look at them and watch and see what they scored and didn't score. And just realize that your view as a spectator is different than what the judges are looking at. The judges are really focused on all the things going on. I encourage you to try sometime if you haven't judged. Volunteer to judge maybe in a class at your student's school, because it gives you a good idea of seeing things from a different perspective, how fast the competition goes, how quickly you have to make a call. It's really important to make sure that you understand that. You see that from a judge's point of view. I'm sure there are some other things in the actual sparring that are important for people to understand, but I think these are some of the big ones. The one other thing I really wanted to cover when it comes to sparring combat is the buy system. This is also often, very confusing for new competitors. Just because there are an even number of sparring competitors in a division does not mean that there won't be any buys. There are only there are not buys if there are two competitors in the ring, four competitors in the ring, eight competitors in the ring, or 16 competitors in the ring. Those are the only numbers in which there are no buys that take place. 4, 8, and 16 are the big ones. Obviously, 2, there's no buys either. If there are any other number of competitors in the ring for sparring or combat, there is going to be buys. That means basically that you advance. If you get the buy, you advance to the next round of competition. Because we do a single elimination bracket, that's just the way it works out. These buys are awarded based on titles for that specific event. If we see that a ring needs two buys, let's say, the center judge is going to ask the competitors to stand up and turn around, and they are going to look for the champion uniform for that division. So let's say it's sparring. They're going to have everybody stand up, turn around, and they're going to look at the back of the uniforms and see who has a championship of some kind in a sparring, for sparring. Okay. So it doesn't have to, be that year, whatever. We're going to get to that in a second. So they see, okay, there are four individuals in this ring that have a sparring championship of some sort on the back of their uniform. So there's four. I can only give out two buys. So how do I do this? They first look for the world champions, and they go from the most current world champion all the way down to the least current. So let's say this ring, again, there are four champion titles in there. There's only one person with a world champion title. Great. The first buy goes to that person who has a world champion title. Okay. So any year, world champion title, those are always first in line to get a bye. Next in line is the district champions or Pan Am champions for this the most current tournament season. Okay. So if you had a district champ or a Pan Am champ from 3 years ago, that's not going to get you a bye. Okay. It has to be from the most current championship season. So let's say we don't have any of those in this ring. We need two byes. We had a world champ. They got the first bye. There were no district champions or Pan Am champions. So now it's time to look at state champions. And there's one state champion from the most current champion season. That person is going to get the other bye. And then there are two other state champions from other years. They don't count, okay? They don't earn a title for that. Or excuse me, they don't earn a bye for that, okay? So in recap, the most current world champion to least current world champion gets the bye, get the byes first in that order. And then if there's anyone from the most current tournament cycles championships for district or Pan Am champions, and then if there are more byes left, then anyone with the most current, the current tournament year, excuse me, the year before technically, the most recent championship year, state champions. If there are any byes left after you look through all those, they are randomly drawn among the competitors. So that's how you earn a bye or how byes are awarded in a sparring and combat division. Of course, if we're looking at byes for combat, we're going to look at the back of the uniform and make sure we look at combat, world champs, district, Pan Am, those kind of things. So that's how it currently stands. Obviously, there are always updates to the rules. If you want to go into tournaments like 303, really advanced, you can make sure you go to atamartialarts.com. You can go to the tournament rules and read through all 107 pages of the tournament rules. They're updated each year. And one of the nice, really nice things that the tournament department does is they highlight in there the more recent tournament rule updates. And that makes it helpful, especially for those of us who've been around for a long time, to go in and be like, oh, I got to make sure I update and look at these things. I like to read through the whole rule thing every once in a while just to make sure I have it. And then I always go back to check this out to make sure I understand any updates. So ladies and gentlemen, that runs through tournaments 101 sparring. Oh, that was a long one. Let's get real quick to some upcoming events.
Here's what's going on in ATA Nation.
Ladies and gentlemen, October is right around the corner, and October has some great events in it. We're going to talk specifically about Founders Month. So the month of October is both Founders Month and Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And so these two things have been tied together with an awesome program. It's the Wishing for Mommy Pink Belt Revolution that goes across the country. Your school might be participating in that. Or, and they may be participating in some kind of fundraiser for the H.U. Lee Scholarship Foundation. We're going to talk about that more during, Founders Month. We're going to talk, with, Chief Master Langren Lee about Wishing for Mommies and the Pink Belt Revolution in an upcoming episode. But, if your school, is involved in those, make sure that you, get that pink belt, or even if they're, if your school hasn't decided to do any kind of fundraiser for the H.U. Lee Scholarship Foundation during Founders Month, this is a great opportunity for you as a leader to talk to your instructor and be like, hey, I would really like to do a fundraiser for the H.U. Lee Scholarship Foundation and see if we can help you guys out with that, help your school out with that, to make sure that we are supporting the legacy of Eternal Grandmaster. With Founders Month coming up, we are really excited. I want to feature some stories from Eternal Grandmaster history. So if you are an instructor, a student, a parent, somebody who had an interaction with Eternal Grandmaster, I would really, really appreciate if you would visit ATAMA, like ATA Martial Arts, ATAMA.ninja/founder. ATA.ninja/founder. I'll send this out to our insiders as well. I want you to record your story about Eternal Grandmaster H.U. Lee, and we want to feature that on the podcast. Many, many people out there in ATA Nation have never had the opportunity to hear about Eternal Grandmaster. They were not around when they weren't in Taekwondo yet. Some of you weren't even born yet until after Eternal Grandmaster passed away. And so we want to make sure that we continue to share his legacy, share the stories about him. And maybe we'll do a giveaway. I got an idea for a giveaway too, but we'll see. So please, if you have a story, we would love to share it. You don't have to be live on the podcast. I'm going to give you that link again. And you can go there and you can record it. You mess up, you just re-record it. It's really easy to do it right from your phone or computer. So that link again is ATAMA.ninja/founder. ATAMA.ninja/founder. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to wrap it up for us today. Long episode, but all kinds of great information. Please share this with a friend. We want to make sure everybody is having an awesome time at competitions in ATA Nation, and learning more information will certainly help you achieve that. So until next time, make sure you're out there taking action.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the ATA Nation podcast. Be sure to subscribe and share with your ATA family.
I'm here. I got a couple of messages from some of you long-time secret section listeners. Congratulations on listening to all of them. We really appreciate it. Hey, if you know somebody or you know a story that should be shared about Eternal Grandmaster, make sure that you visit that link, because we really want to carry on that legacy and let people hear these stories, and not just from me. But people are scared of recording and whatnot. Come on. You guys are leaders. You guys are action takers. Make sure you, get out there, record that story so we can, share with the new generation. Okay, guys. Gotta go. Time to teach some classes. Later.